The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International. Coming up on Life Today, after selling drugs and stealing cars, Ronald Olivier faced the death penalty for murder at just 17 years old.
12 people are making a decision upon whether I live or die, and they really don't know anything about me. And I heard, I believe God was bringing this back to my memory. She said, baby, if you ever in trouble that I can't get you out, you call on Jesus.
Welcome to Life Today. I'm Randy Robinson. Tammy's with me. How are you doing, Tammy?
I'm good. Today's a good day.
It is a good day. And, you know, it's encouraging. And that's what I like about today's program. You know, we see stories on the news all the time of mainly young men, you know, caught up in the streets, maybe in drugs, gang activity sometimes, and often ends in tragedy. And I think we get a little numb to it.
Yeah, I could say that, too.
But
yeah.
There's always hope.
There is always hope, Randy, and I love how the Lord brings people across our paths to remind us of His hope, to remind us of a redeemed life, how He can take somebody's life and change it and turn it around for good.
Yeah.
So many times we say, oh, that person is so far gone. There's no hope. There's no way. But I'm telling you, you will love the testimony that we have today, and it will bring you hope, and especially maybe to a mama that's a praying mama that might say, man, does God hear my prayer? Should I keep praying?
Yeah.
I think you should, and I think you'll hear why.
You will, and it's told in a book called 27 Summers, written by Ronald Olivier, and he joins us now. Ronald, great to have you on Life Today.
Great to be here.
All right, so I kind of gave him a little bit of a hint, you know, growing up, tough circumstances, father walking out, the streets, the gangs, the drugs. Tell us where that led, how you got to that point that we'll explain the title of your book.
Yes, well, I grew up in New Orleans, the inner cities, in a neighborhood that was filled with a lot of crime, and a real great transition took place about the late 1980s, and it was the crack epidemic. Came into our neighborhood and completely destroyed it. So with a lot of drugs comes a lot of violence. And I can remember the birds wouldn't even come out anymore. It was that bad. And during that same period of time, there's another great transition taking place in my life. My dad, who was my hero, you know, I come from a broken home, so my dad was remarried and decided he had to move to Jacksonville, Florida. And when he moved, oh man, I was very broken. I was angry. I was hurt, and I couldn't wrap my mind around what was going on and how to define what was happening in me. And so when I really needed a father to go through that, to navigate me through all of that, he wasn't there, and the streets was there.
Yeah.
And so the streets began to follow me, and consequently, I found myself in prison at the age of 16.
So let's explain that a little bit.
Yes.
What happened that landed you there?
Well, prior to the altercation that took place that got me there, I had gotten a fight with some guys, one guy, and we actually jumped him. It was several of us behind something crazy, and the next time he sees us is we're on Canal Street, and it's actually Christmas Day, and kind of outnumbered. And he was with more guys that I was with. And so we got into it. And during that time, I had on a starter jacket. And when you wear a starter jacket during that time, it was very dangerous. You had to have a gun on you.
Yeah.
People were robbing you and killing you behind your jacket. And so we saw him out there really try to avoid him and try to get on the bus to leave. And they tried to snatch me off the bus. And I turned around and shot. And so two guys were shot. One, the guy who survived, who actually I had an altercation with, who tried to snatch me off the bus, I think. He was shot four times, and another guy who was with him was shot twice, and that's the one who died. Mm. And this happened Christmas Day. And so later, 2 days later, I find myself in a juvenile on B-roll, and I was so used to it. I've been there quite a few times, and my mother would come sign me out, and I was looking for my mother to sign me out of this. But she couldn't sign me out of that. So I later went to a juvenile detention center, and after going to court several times, and they decided to charge me as an adult and send me to an adult prison. And now I went from facing juvenile life to the age, which was to the age of 21, to facing the death penalty. Mm. And so I find myself on trial at the age of 17 for first-degree murder. I'm facing the death penalty. And I think this is where everything got real at. This is where I felt the weight of it. And so I began to realize, okay, 12 people are making a decision upon whether I live or die, and they really don't know anything about me. Mm. And then I heard so clearly, my mother said this years prior to me being there, and I heard, I believe God was bringing this back to my memory. She said, baby, if you're ever in trouble that I can't get you out, you call on Jesus.
Amen.
And at that moment, I got on my knees and just cried out to God. I was crying tears. I was real scared. I didn't want to die. And I prayed a simple prayer. I made a deal with God. They say, don't make deals with God. I made a deal with him. And my prayer was, Lord, if you don't let them kill me, I promise you I'll serve you the rest of my life. Mm. And, man, I'm here. You know, he kept his end of the deal, and I'm trying to keep mine.
So when you called on him, when you surrendered your life in that cell, what happened next?
Oh, man, for the first time in my life, I didn't know what it was, but for the first time in my life, I felt the peace of God. Mm-hmm. There was a calmness that came over me, and I just had an inward reassurance that I was going to be okay. Couldn't Amazing. Explain it, didn't
yes.
know how,
yeah.
just knew I was going to be okay. And so we go back out into the courtroom. The jury comes back with a guilty verdict of the lesser offense, which is the responsive verdict, second-degree murder. And what I didn't know, it carried a mandatory life sentence without benefits of parole and probation. In layman terms, that means you die in prison. You
wow.
never get out.
Yeah.
And I was kind of relieved that I was living, but I was still stunned that I have to spend the rest of my life in prison. And I can remember listening to the judge saying that, and it kind of really stunned me. But I like to tell it like this. In that holding tank, man, I received two life sentences.
Mm.
You know, the state was giving me one, but God was giving me one. The state had no benefits, but the life sentence that God gave me had so many benefits that he reminds us in his word not to forget it.
Oh, totally.
I love that. I love that. You know what? And the story after this just continues, and I want you to hear what happened to Ronald after he started his life sentence in prison, because that's an amazing miracle too. But first, we want to show you a situation where, unfortunately, some people feel like they may have a death sentence, but you and I have the opportunity to reach in and give them life. Watch this.
When I'm on a missions trip, I can't help but feel the pain a mother has when she sees her child suffering because there's no food for her. This is Armida. Can you begin to imagine the crushing impact of losing your children because you could not feed them? It was devastating for Armida, but she knows she must carry on for her other children. How does she manage it? Through fervent prayer.
I Ella tu kasih tu membina. Cuma tu asal tu mandat tu. Eh, mau tuan bantu ke? Dah. Jika cakap, eh, jangan lupa bantu kita. Dah bantu aku tuan minta sama.
I would love to tell you Armita's story of losing her children because the lack of food is rare, but it's not. These women, by show of hands, shared how many children they each had lost. They well know the same heartache as Armita. Mandalina lost 5 children. Yungo, 2 children. Margarita, 1 child. Julia, 3 children. One thing all these precious mothers have in common through prayer is they put their hope for tomorrow in the hands of Jesus.
My heart is always moved by all the precious mothers I meet here in Africa. And I'm especially moved because I know we share the same hope in Jesus and the way he provides. Today, you and I have the opportunity to be his hands and a direct answer to these mothers' prayers. God is truly on the move in Africa, and I invite you to be a part of it.
It's very fresh for me because I just got back from Ethiopia, and their loss is devastating. Their suffering is enormous. The heartache is almost unbearable. Many mothers feel like failures when they lose a child. And sitting here with you today, I don't want to fail them. I don't want to fail these mothers. When I'm sitting with them, when I'm talking with them, when I'm walking with them, when I'm praying with them, I just keep thinking, I don't want to fail you. How can I help? So I love doing what I am privileged to be able to do. What an honor for me to speak for them in their greatest time of need and to share that need with you today. Together, we can make a difference and an impact in the lives of these families, especially these mamas that don't want to lose another child. We are feeding right now 350,000 children every day. And we want to do more. We need to do more. As you saw in that piece, we have to do more. It's not that hard to come together and make a difference starting right now, doing something today. $30 will feed 3 children for 3 months. 50 will feed 5. 100 will feed 10. And $1,000 will feed 100 children for the next 3 months. This is something we need to do. We have to do. We must do. We must do this as God's children. He's asking us to stand in the gap today, right now, for these families. Would you go online? Would you make a call? Would you give the very best gift you can today? Let's not fail these mothers.
Right now, across the continent of Africa, children are suffering, facing severe malnutrition and even death. Severe drought and famine, including in crisis areas like Ethiopia, means we must replenish food supplies immediately to keep feeding 350,000 children and help reach more people in desperate need. Through Life's Mission Feeding Outreach, your gift of love can be an answer to prayer for a hurting and hungry child in their time of need. Call now with your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 to help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift of any amount, we'll send the blessing of taking communion. In this book, discover how the sacred ordinance of communion helps to feed your soul and remind you of the transformative power of receiving the Lord's Supper. With your gift of $100 or more, you may request the Life Legacy Journal. This beautiful journal and pen will help you write your personal story and share the experiences that made you who you are. One day, the generations that follow will be able to look back and learn from the legacy you've left behind. Finally, with your gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and care for 100 children, be sure to request our inspiring bronze sculpture, A Cup of Water. Please call, write, or make your gift online today.
As you hear what God can do in the lives of anyone, I hope you will be that person to extend God's grace to someone in need right now. So please do go to the phone, go online, make the best gift you can. You really will be intervening in someone's life in a miraculous way. And Tammy, this story, I mean, we're only halfway through it.
Right.
What a miracle.
Seriously. And Ron, I want to ask you, you talk about surrendering your life to Jesus. I'm going to give you my whole life. But now you're in prison for what you feel like and have been told is the rest of your life. So, one, how do you stay alive in prison? How do you find hope? And how do you serve Christ in prison? Like, what happened that kept you on that path of serving Jesus no matter what the outcome was going to be?
Yes, ma'am. Well, I think it took me like 2 years to look like something happened to me.
Okay. You know, yeah, I kind of wondered how long that, yes, if it happened right away or if it took some time to find that.
Right. And so I still was doing some of the same things, still talking the same way. But the difference was that I wasn't comfortable doing it anymore. I was being convicted.
Yeah.
I felt bad about it. And so I had no one to really disciple me and show me how to walk this Christian life out. And until I ended up in Angola. Oh, man, God brought me around some of the, man, most awesome men of God that I have ever met.
In prison.
In prison.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
amazing.
They began to disciple me and teach me how important it was to read my Bible, to update my mind on what happened in my spirit. They taught me about having a prayer life, how essential that was to me being staying connected to God. Mm. And taught me how important it was to fellowship together. Yeah. And so as I began to do that, man, the closer I got to God and the more things began to just fall off of me. Mm-hmm. And so, and just like a newborn baby that comes out of the womb, it don't look like the little pretty gerbil baby, you know.
Right.
It comes out with all type of afterbirth. It has to go through a process.
Yes. Yes.
And so that's how I was. I looked like what I had came out of,
Wow.
You know. And so these guys began to help me and clean me up and feed me until I was able to feed myself. And from that moment, man, God began to really change me and change my heart, my thinking, and my perspective began to change on life. And I start to see and search for purpose and what God created me to do and to be. And that led me to later going to Bible college.
In prison.
In prison.
This is what I love. Tell this story. It's fantastic.
And so in 1995, New Orleans Baptist Theological Center established an extension center in Angola where professors would come from off the street, lecturers to test us, just like any other college.
Wow.
And it was amazing. It was so awesome, and I learned so much. You know, I was born again, but Bible college gave me a toolbox,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And how to really function in ministry, you know. And so after you graduate, you have an opportunity to be a missionary to go to another prison in Louisiana and assist chaplains and pastor churches. And so I sensed God calling me to do that, and I accepted the call, and I later went to a prison in Cottonport, Louisiana, which was a boys' correctional center, and I assisted the chaplain and pastor the church. It was just a phenomenal place for me and taught me a whole lot in leadership. I believe this here with all my heart of hearts that, man, if you can pastor a church in prison,
yeah,
you
right.
can pastor it anywhere.
No
because
doubt.
Yes.
Because we live with our members.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
We never go home.
And what a great testimony of you surrendering in that moment of duress and God taking bad things and making something good. But there's something else that happened because, you know, you were rightly convicted of murder.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What happened when you had the chance to speak to the mother of your victim?
And so in 2012, the United States Supreme Court come down with a ruling that said it was unconstitutional to give a juvenile under the age of 18 a mandatory life sentence. It said it violated our Eighth Amendment, which is cruel and unusual punishment, and that we should have some type of meaningful opportunity for freedom on it. It also talks about the frontal lobe of the brain and how it's made up and how, you know, it's not fully developed until you're 25, and how that part of the brain helps you appreciate risk and consequences. Mm-hmm. And so that's why juveniles do some crazy things.
Yeah.
And so that opened the door for me to go back to court to be re-sentenced, because when that ruling came down, that meant that my sentence was now illegal. And so they had to re-sentence me. And so I go back and forth to court, and I never forget when I got to court, my lawyers was very nervous. They come over there frantic, like, say, man, the victim's sister showed up, you know? And I was like, I noticed when I got there on the front row, right across the aisle, a lady just kept staring at me. And she looked familiar, but I couldn't place her. And I didn't want to stare back because I looked kind of scary with handcuffs and shackles on. And so I was kind of looking at her through my periphery and saw she was still standing. So when they came and brought that to me, I was like, no, that's not the sister. That's the mother of the guy that I killed. And I remember her face because out of anybody in the courtroom, I didn't remember how the judge looked. Didn't even remember how my lawyer looked. And definitely not the DA. But her face was branded in my mind throughout the years. And so when I developed a prayer life, I prayed for her more than I prayed for anybody.
Wow.
And so my greatest desire was not to get home. Above that was that I could have this dialogue with her and just let her know how sorry I was for what I'd done. And so when they came and gave me that news in the courtroom, I said, well, see if I can talk to her. You know, so they go over there and get with the DA and talk with her. And they come back with a message with her saying that she didn't want to talk to me and that everything she was going to say, she was going to say it on the stand. So I said, okay, but they end up setting the court date back a month. And so that gave me a month to pray. And so again, I began to pray for her. And consequently, when we went back to court, she requested that I talk to her.
Wow.
Love it.
And so when we have this dialogue, man, this was like the hardest conversation I have ever had in my life. And so I turned around to her. They sat up behind me next to the DA. And I break the silence with them. I say, ma'am, I'm just sorry. You know, I'm sorry. And I take full responsibility of the death of your son. And She her arms were folded tight and she was staring. But when I said that, her arms came down, she took a deep breath, she exhaled, and she leaned toward me. And I asked her to forgive me. And she said, and by this time, there's no dry eye. Both of us are crying. It's a very emotional conversation. And she says, I don't hate you. And I forgive you. Man, just an awesome moment in my life. Although I was handcuffed and shackled, I felt that come off of me. I felt free. And it didn't even matter what happened in the proceedings of the court after that. I was just, man, it was just a weight that came off, and I can see a weight came off of her also. And so later she got on the stand and echoed what she said to me in private and put it on record. And later they resentenced me and gave me parole eligibility.
And now you're out after 27 summers.
Yes.
In prison.
Yes. Yes.
The power of forgiveness, Ronald.
Mm-hmm.
The power of forgiveness. I don't hate you. I forgive you. I think so many people, we carry so much for so long, even feeling like we can't come to the Father and ask the Father to forgive us of things. And so we just carry it around. And the weight that I think that takes on year after year after year because we just keep hanging on, just thinking maybe we've gone too far and our lives aren't worthy of forgiveness. But your life was worthy of it. Your proof of that today, the hope that rises up within you, how God has used your life is spectacular. And it's a reminder that God wants to use all of our lives in such a powerful way. Forgiveness is a gift from God. And if you are carrying a heavy weight today, come to the Father, lay it at the foot of the cross, and ask Jesus to pick that up for you so that you don't have to carry it any longer. He wants to forgive and give you a brand new life, a redeemed life, a transformed life, so that He can do beautiful things with your life. You are a living example of that.
Yes, ma'am.
What a gift to us all.
Yeah, and we have a gift for you. If you want Ronald's book, 27 Summers, request it when you support the Mission Feeding Outreach. Your gift of $30, $50, $100, whatever you can do, it will make a huge difference. And Tammy, it's such a great story. Last question,
yes.
If I can get this in. What do you do today on the outside of prison?
I'm a client advocate for the Louisiana Parole Project.
Wow.
We help guys who've been in prison a long time, especially over 20 years, make a transition from prison to society. And we have wraparound services where we help them with housing, clothing, food, and just all their essentials, and help them get jobs, of course. Since it's been in operation since 2016, we're right at 600 clients we have helped, and we have a less than 2% recidivism rate, which means that if somebody comes through our program, they're more than likely not to go back to prison again.
Yeah, I love it. Tammy, the freedom, the forgiveness, the redemption.
Absolutely. I mean, God is building up an army inside the walls
And outside the walls. And by the way,
yes.
If you're praying for that someone, that young Ronald in your life, keep praying. Don't give up. Lord, we pray with them right now that you would give them strength and hope and know that nobody is beyond redemption.
Yeah,
keep praying. We'll see you again next time on Life Today.
Tackles some of the most perplexing questions that Christians face, like why isn't God answering my prayers? Or how do I find my purpose? Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.